जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोकुलानंद की जय। श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा मई की जय। श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं। वंदेहं श्री गुरुः श्रीयुत पदकमलं श्री गुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्री रूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादांग सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च। नम ओम विष्णु पादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एवच पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। आई एम वेरी हैप्पी टू बी विथ specifically all the devotees of Richmond. I do hope that all of you are in the best of health and in cheerful Krishna consciousness. I have fond memories of my visit to Richmond some years ago. A warm welcome also to others who are on this conference on various platforms. And I also hope that you are also all well and in cheerful Krishna consciousness. The topic that I chose today to speak on is the importance of offering obeisances, because it is something that we do every single day. It is something that we cannot imagine our life without. Of course, even if one is physically in some way incapacitated, one offers obeisances in the mind, and we will come to that shortly. So the idea of offering obeisances is very much an intrinsic part of the process of devotion to Lord Krishna. And in every aspect, when you enter the temple, you offer obeisances. When you see senior devotees, you offer obeisances. When you see Tulsi Maharani, you offer obeisances. So it's just such an integral part of our life that it's just something we take for granted, perhaps. Sometimes we may do it mechanically, sometimes we may not really realize the full import of the act that we are performing. Of course, the word obeisance means deferential respect. It is also a gesture of deferential respect. And generally, whether in material life or in spiritual life, an obeisance is offered for various reasons. It may be offered as an expression of humility or of love to somebody who is elderly or senior or respectable. It may be an expression of surrender, an expression of need. It may sometimes in this world also be an expression of the fact that we are victims of exploitation. And that is why in the modern day and age, people in general who are not in devotional life look askance, or they do not look kindly upon somebody offering obeisances to somebody else, even if it is the Supreme Lord. They feel that offering obeisances is something very demeaning to oneself, to one's sense of dignity. And one is after all equal in this world, and therefore, you know, why should one do such a thing that is so humiliating? So an offering of obeisance is considered by many people in the modern age to be an act of servility, obsequiousness, of humiliation, actually. Sometimes in material life it may be so. And perhaps people have some experience of either in their own life or in somebody else's life. You know, if there's a very poor man in a feudal society and he goes to a landlord and he offers obeisances out of fear for his life, or because he needs money for his livelihood to maintain his family or something. Obviously, in such cases, an act of obeisance is exploitative in nature. But in spiritual life, it is not the case. In spiritual life, the devotee offers obeisances, first of all, to one who is worthy of respect. And secondly, it is offered with full knowledge. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned that generally there are four types of motivations for one to perform any kind of activity or work. One is fear. We may perform our work, let's say, in an office or something, out of fear that if I don't do this properly, I may be removed from my job or something like that. The next, which is slightly higher, is is fear. I beg your pardon, reward. One generally works in a job, or not generally, always works in a job to get a salary so that one can enjoy the fruits of one's labor. One uses that money for various purposes. So there is a sense of reward. One works with expectation of money or some other material gain at the end of the month. Then, a little higher, there is a sense of duty. And finally, in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's words, there is love. Now, when you offer obeisances to somebody in material life, you could also have these four categories. We see in Vedic culture that even if the obeisance was not offered in a devotional consciousness from a spiritual point of view, but generally, let's say young people offered respects or obeisances to their elders, to their parents, you know, that was the etiquette, it was the culture. So it was sometimes out of love for their elders, sometimes out of maybe respect, out of a sense of duty. So in material life, in Vedic culture also we see these things. But generally in Vedic culture one is expected to have some spiritual understanding as well. And when one comes to a spiritual understanding, and especially when one understands the process of devotion to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, then the obeisance, the offering of obeisances becomes the most meaningful. Because one now offers obeisances to the Supreme Lord, to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami explain in connection with the famous Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse that when the word Krishna Anushilanam is used, Krishna Anushilanam, that one performs activities of service to Krishna, the word Krishna includes not just Krishna of Vrindavan, but all his expansions, all the Vishnu Tattva forms of the Lord, Ram, Narasimha, etc. It also includes those entities who are very closely connected to the Lord, who are dear to the Lord. For example, Tulasi Maharani, Yamuna, the devotees of the Lord, the cows, and so on. So when we offer obeisances in devotional service, in Krishna consciousness, we do so primarily to Krishna and to those connected to Krishna. Now, the vision of Krishna consciousness is quite expansive. So really, in that sense, nothing is not connected to Krishna. So a person who is truly Krishna conscious actually will offer obeisances to everything and everyone, but with the understanding of that connection to Krishna. When one offers obeisances to anything and everything without that understanding, with perhaps the mistaken idea that everything is God, and therefore I can offer obeisances to a stone because any ordinary stone is God, then that is a mistaken idea. So one may sometimes have some other kind of misconception. But a pure devotee's conception is that everything is ultimately connected to Krishna. Srila Ramanujacharya once was walking down the sea beach, and he saw some children, you know, who were perhaps playing with the sand, and they had made some little play with deities of sand, and they were offering something, and Ramanujacharya offered his full obeisance there. You know, because he could see that in the innocent heart of these children, they were actually offering, they were serving the Supreme Lord in whatever little rudimentary conception that they had. Ordinarily, however, for devotees, we don't go around offering obeisances, at least with the body, to everything and everyone. We specifically offer obeisances to the deity of the Lord, to the Vaishnavas, to Tulasi, to Ganga, Yamuna, cows, etc. So the service offered to entities or categories in connection with Krishna is called Tadiya Seva. I remember one time there was a person who used to come regularly to the temple, and he would like hearing the lectures, he would like participating in the kirtans. He liked the devotees, he would like prasadam. And one time he came to me and said that he had questions to ask. And so I happily agreed, and we had many nice discussions. And he was raised in a religious background in which it was prohibited to offer obeisances. And the idea was that one should offer obeisances only to the Supreme and to nobody else. But the problem was that the conception of Supreme was not clear. So therefore, in effect, they ended up not offering obeisances at all, physically at least with the mind. They did so at the time of offering prayers. But what exactly the entity, that supreme entity was, there was no clear idea or conception. So he said, I like everything about Krishna consciousness, but there's only one thing that I can't do. I said, what is that? He said, I can't offer obeisances in the temple. I said, why not? He said, because I've been raised in the understanding that one should offer obeisances only to the Supreme. So I said, but this is the Supreme, the deity, this is the deity of Krishna. He is non-different from Krishna. It is Krishna who has manifested in material elements to be able to, out of his mercy, to bestow his mercy upon us and to accept our service in different ways. However, the idea that the Lord can be served or seen or understood in any form, and especially in material elements, was something that was so difficult for him to come to terms with that he could not accommodate that, he could not digest that. And so therefore this was his difficulty, and I could understand that this is where he's coming from. So we had nice discussions, and I hope and pray that he has somehow or the other overcome this particular inhibition and is now able to full-heartedly, lay flat on the ground and offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord Krishna. But even when it is to devotees, sometimes in the outside world there are misconceptions, and here is a little incident which I experienced myself, which I often like to narrate to devotees. When I was in a particular country one time, I was going to a program. And as we entered the building in which the program was to be held, it was a multi-story department building, and the host came down, and then we were a few of us devotees, and he offered obeisances to all of us. So there was another gentleman, a local, who happened to be walking by. And when he saw this, he was infuriated. And he was so angry that he actually became red-faced, and he came up to me and he said, why is he doing that to you? He said it in a rather menacing way. And some of the other devotees got a little concerned, to some degree maybe even a little alarmed, because this person was big in size and he seemed very annoyed. And he perhaps thought that this was something very demeaning, very exploitative. It was slavish indicative of a slavish mentality or something like that. And in any case, somehow I spoke a few words to him and then we went inside. So personally, in the Western world and even to a large degree in India nowadays, in public places to offer obeisances is really not looked at well. I'm not suggesting that devotees shouldn't do it for that reason, but sometimes in some places where there particularly may be some problem associated with that kind of an act, perhaps we can just be a little discreet about doing these things and be a little sensitive. And one can offer obeisances with one's folded hands, bowed head, and with words, you know. Because an obeisance is not always with the fully extended body. The word obeisance is technically, there are two or three words in Sanskrit, many words actually, but the two chief words which are common, and I'm sure you've heard all of them, one is pranam. The word pranam is very indicative of an obeisance, of an act of respect. The word pra is a prefix. You know, it indicates something that is forward, you know. And anama indicates something that is, you know, where you bend down. So the word pranama actually indicates moving, bending down forward to offer respect. So this is pranam. So there are different kinds of obeisances that can be offered, you know. There are different types of namaskar. The other word is namaha. So if you look at various sources, then you may find different descriptions of the different types of pranams to be offered. Don't get confused by saying that. But in general, we can understand the word pranam in Sanskrit to indicate, you know, moving the body forward in some way, either partly or fully, or bending forward in some way to offer respect. So, the word namaha is also synonymous with that. It means obeisance, you know. And you've heard of words called like namaskar, namaste, namostute. Yes, and for us as devotees, the word namaha is very common. We say it every single day. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Niti Namine. Right? Namaha Om Vishnu Padaya. I offer my obeisances. Yes? So to all our acharyas, to the spiritual master, So we say this, we offer the word, we offer our obeisances, because that is the injunction of the scripture, that one must offer obeisances to the spiritual master and to the Vaishnavas. Similarly, Namo Namaha, Tulasi Krishna Priyasi Namo Namaha. Every day we offer obeisances to Tulasi Maharani. Vrindayai Tulasi Devyai Priyayai Keshavasicha Vishnu Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavatyai Namo Namaha. So we offer respects and obeisances to Tulasi Maharani. Yes. Similarly to Krishna, there are so many beautiful verses in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and also the other devotional literature in which the devotees offer their obeisances to Krishna. So, of course, as devotees, we try to be on the platform of love. You remember I mentioned a little earlier about the four types of motivations for performing any activity as given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we should try to be on the platform of love when we offer obeisances. At least on the platform of duty, if not obeisance, if not love. But generally we should avoid offering obeisances, or rather our motivation should not be fear or material reward. When there is an exceptional circumstance which is, let's say, life-threatening or something like that, then yes, it is natural for a devotee to pray for protection, offer prayers, maybe offer obeisances. So such exceptional circumstances do not constitute a fault on the devotional service of the devotee, the purity of that devotee's devotion. So that is all right in such life-threatening or very, very exceptional circumstances. But normally one should avoid offering obeisances or performing any devotional service for that matter induced by fear and material reward. The mode of goodness is a sense of duty. So at least we should know I am duty bound by the scriptures to offer obeisances. Therefore I must do it. I may not feel like doing it. I may not be naturally inclined at that point in time. My mind may be disturbed for some reason. I may not at that point in time be feeling some devotion to the Lord. My mind may be preoccupied with something else. But nevertheless, as a discipline, one can do that. So out of a sense of duty, out of obedience to the words of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, one can do that. And the best, of course, is when we offer out of love. There are innumerable verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in other devotional scriptures about devotees offering obeisances with love. I'll just cite maybe one or two of them because we don't have the time to recite so many verses. All of you are familiar with the celebrated prayers of Queen Kunti in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And she prays, Namaha Pankaja Nabhaya, Namaha Pankaja Maline, Namaha Pankaja Netraya, Namaste Pankaja Angraye. So Namaha Namaha, the word Namaha comes in every line. So she says, Namaha Pankaja Nabhaya. Krishna is called Pankaja Nabha or Pankaja Nabhi. One whose navel resembles the depression, the depression of the navel resembles a lotus flower. So is Pankaja Nabha or Pankaja Nabhi. Then Namaha Pankaja Maline. I offer obeisances to the one who is called Pankaja Mali. One or Pankaja Mala. One who wears a garland of lotus flowers. So in that very nice painting of BBT that is there in the Bhagavatam, you can see the painting that depicts Queen Kunti offering her prayers to Krishna, that Krishna is on the chariot and Kunti Maharani with folded hands is offering prayers, that Krishna is wearing a garland of lotus flowers. So the word Pankaja means lotus. So Pankaja Mali, one who wears mala or garland of lotus flowers. Namaha Pankaja Netraya. Netra means eyes. So the different parts of Krishna's transcendental body are compared to lotuses. So his eyes also are as beautiful as the lotus. Much more beautiful actually than the material lotus, but the lotus is as best an indication as we can from this material world to exhibit or display Krishna's beauty. So Krishna is Pankaja Netra or Pankaja Netri. So she offers obeisances to Krishna, who is Pankaja Netri, or he is also called Kamalaksha, Pundarikaksha, which mean the same thing. The one who has eyes that are blossomed like the lotus petals. And then finally she says, Namaste Pankajangraye. Angri refers to the lotus feet. Angraye, that means unto the lotus feet. So Krishna is called Pankajangri because he has lotus feet. His feet also are compared to the lotus. So in this way, Kunti Maharani, with great devotion, prays like this to Krishna, offering obeisances out of love. And out of duty, Brahma also, when he comes into on the earth planet to offer obeisances, you know, this is after the Brahma Vimohana Leela. When he wants to see the glories of Krishna and Krishna exhibiting his mystic yogic prowess, and Brahma is suitably chastened and he understands how insignificant his own yogic prowess is in front of Krishna's unlimited yogic powers, then he comes down to the earth from his planet and he comes before Krishna in a solitary place and he begins offering beautiful prayers of devotion. Now Brahma's prayers here are offered in a mixed state of devotion because the devotion is also tinged with a feeling of awe and reverence because Brahma is still awestruck by the kind of mystic powers that were exhibited by Krishna when he exhibited exact replicas or duplicates of the cowherd boys and calves that had been kidnapped by Brahma and placed in a cave. So Brahma was astonished. He was struck with wonder. So when he came down to offer obeisances, he had a mixture of love, of duty, of some little sense of fear and reward as well, but not material reward, of course. But he was thinking in terms of how he could get Krishna's blessing so that, you know, he can understand Krishna deeper. He had not really understood Krishna properly. Now he was able to witness Krishna's glories in front of his own eyes. So he was grateful. So his prayers were a mix of all of these things. And out of this gratitude and appreciation, he just speaks eloquently, verse after verse, about glorifying Krishna. You know, this is in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. And in one of the verses, he says, Tattenu kampam susamikshamano bhunjana evatmakritam vipakam ritvagvapur bhirvidadhan namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadaya bhak. A very famous verse. I'm sure many of you have memorized it, or at least you have heard of it. In this verse, Lord Brahma says to Krishna that, my dear Lord, if anybody approaches you in a very humble mood, when he or she is suffering from some difficult situation, understanding that difficult situation to be an outcome of his own sinful activities performed in some previous ages, days, either in this life or in a previous life, and the devotee expectantly waits for your mercy, tatte anukampam susamikshamano, very earnestly, eagerly waits for your mercy, understanding his suffering to be the product of his own bad karma in the past, not blaming anybody else. And rid vak vapuhu bhi vidadhan namaste. And with his rid means the heart, vak means the speech, and vapuhu means the body. Vidadhan means to offer, namaste means obeisances. Vidadhan namaste, namaha te. I offer my obeisances unto you. So, namaste or namaskar, that is what it means. I was referring to it in one of my previous lectures some weeks ago. So, he says, anyone who does this and then with his heart, with his words and with his body offers obeisances to you, then can actually conquer you and becomes entitled, rightful. He becomes a rightful claimant for your kingdom, the spiritual world. Daya Bhak. He becomes an inheritor of your abode. So in this way, Brahma is speaking about now in this mixed mode, but it's still a very devotional prayer. It's a prayer that we as devotees are also reminded to offer to Krishna when we are in difficulty. And we offer our obeisances to Krishna. And it's interesting here that Brahma gives a rather expanded understanding of the term obeisances, of namaste. Generally, in India, the word namaste is an act or a gesture that only indicates folding your hands. It's called Kritanjali, with folded hands like that. And perhaps a little bending of the head to some degree, and that's called a namaste. So it's a greeting. To anyone you meet, you say namaste or namaskar. So in culture, in ordinary Vedic culture, this was the idea. The word namaskar, although it's not just a formality, it's just not some mechanical thing, there's a deep purport to it where you actually offer obeisances with body, mind and words. So not just physically, but the word also with one's heart, that is the mind, and also with one's words. So this is the genuine meaning of an obeisance. It's not merely a mechanical act of lying down on the floor or bowing down or even folding one's hands. The body, the senses, the physical senses of the body must be active, certainly, in an obeisance. But also it must be done with the heart. It must be done feelingly, with some sense of devotion, appreciation, gratitude, a sense of humility, a sense of respect for the one to whom we are offering obeisances. And also one's words. In fact, in the Nectar of Devotion, it is explained that it is an offense to offer obeisances silently to the deity or to the spiritual master or to the Vaishnavas. Excuse me. So, one should, if one is in front of the spiritual master, then one should chant his pranam mantra. If one is offering obeisances to the devotees, one should chant the Vaishnava pranam mantra, Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha, etc. If one is offering obeisances to the deities, one can chant aloud the names of the deities and glorify them. Say, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokul Ananda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, like that. So obeisances are not silently offered. They are offered with the spoken word. They are offered from the heart with genuine feeling. And there is also the involvement of the physical body. So this is actually the genuine namaskar, or the genuine, the deeper purport of the namaste. So actually, one of our acharyas has explained, I'm forgetting now where I have got this from, but it's somewhere in some purport of, or some commentary of some of the acharyas, that he says, there are four types of namaskars. I had made this note in my diary long ago. I noted this down. There are four types of namaskar. One type of namaskar is called Abhinandana. In the Abhinandana, it is like a bowing down. one bows down physically. Maybe one folds hands as well, and one bows down like that. So that is one kind of offering of obeisance or namaskar. Another kind of obeisance is kara shira sanyoga. Kara means the hand. Shiram in Sanskrit means the head. In Hindi you say sar. In Sanskrit it is shira. Shirodhari, we say, you know. When you accept someone's request as an instruction on your head, you say shirodhari, which means I accept your instructions or your words on my head. So shira, kara shira, sanyoga. Sanyoga means the meeting or touching. So kara shira sanyoga means that you fold your hands and then you touch them to your head like that. And generally you would also bow a little bit. So this is also an act of obeisance. Then there is the ashtanga pranam, the ashtanga namaskar. Ashta means eight. And anga means the limb. So eight parts of your body are involved in this gesture. Your two feet, your two knees, your two hands, your chest and your forehead. So generally this is the ashtanga pranam. This is what we call dandavat pranam. Yes? The word danda is a stick. Vat means like. So dandavat means you offer obeisances like a stick. A stick is first of all, it's not bent in so many places, straight. So you offer obeisances straight, erect. And you are flat on the ground. You offer obeisances with hands outstretched. And so that is an ashtanga pranam, where your body touches the ground at these eight places of your body, and then with outstretched hand. Generally, it is not the practice to offer obeisances with your hand tucked under your body. It should be outstretched. And some devotees, depending on the different cultural backgrounds they come from, they cross their feet, also they cross their hands, and some people may do it just straight like that. Either way is fine. I also narrate this humorous incident. One time when I was in Vrindavan, sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada's, in front of Srila Prabhupada's deity and chanting japa along with other devotees, then one devotee came and offered obeisances to Srila Prabhupada's deity. It was a very good obeisance. It was perfect. Technically sound obeisance. You know, a textbook case of an obeisance. It was perfectly done. And he remained on the floor for an unduly long period of time. Generally one finishes that in, you know, let's say half a minute or maybe a minute or so. It doesn't take so long, and then one rises after that. But this devotee remained on the floor, and the initial thought that crossed my mind was that he's really such a devoted person, because he must be chanting, reciting so many verses to Prabhupada, and he must be offering some prayers in his mind perhaps, and so on. And perhaps he came with that intention. He was a very sincere devotee. That's not to cast any aspersions on his devotional credentials. But then we realized that he had fallen asleep as he was offering obeisances there, lying on the floor. So anyway, so that is dandavat pranam. So it must be offered not just with words. I remember when I was in Mayapur one time, there was one of our sannyasis, and another devotee, you know, went by, and in a kind of a flippant way, and he said, "Dandavat Maharaj, Dandavat." So this sannyasi spoke to him and said, "You know, Dandavat is to be done, not just to be spoken. It's not something that you just casually say with your mouth, dandavat, dandavat, very cheerily, you just say, Dandavat, Dandavat. So even if you're not actually falling flat on the ground to offer obeisances, the least one can do when one utters the word Dandavat is to fold one's hands in Kritanjali Mudra. It's called the Anjali Mudra. Krita, to make your hands into the Anjali Mudra, like Kritanjali. So at least with that, and bow your head a little bit. If you have to say Dandavat, then say Dandavat, because sometimes you may not be able to offer obeisances with your full body or something. So then you can say this, Dandavat. But it's not something that we can just say so casually. It's not a casual greeting. Yes? Dandavat Prabhu, how are you? So you should say, Dandavat Prabhu, how are you? Yes? At least with folded hands. So that is Ashtanga Pranam. And then there is something called the Panchanga Pranam, where generally ladies will offer this form of pranam, and sometimes men may also offer, where one offers obeisances with two knees, two arms, and the forehead. Of course, the feet also touch, but this is called Panchanga, Panchanga Pranam. Now, you will find various, people defining Panchanga, Ashtanga, and there's also something called Shashtanga. Shashta means you touch, the body touches at six places, and they include things like the vision and the mind and so on. So you'll find all these different understandings of the terms, but I'm just sticking to this particular general definition or description of these terms. So we spoke about the four types of namaskar or pranam, which is abhivandana. Then there is Karashirasa Yoga, there is Ashtanga, and there is Panchanga. And the Ashtanga is like a Dandavat Pranam. So we offer these kind of obeisances. And as I mentioned, it's important to keep in mind that all three have to be involved. Our mind, that is our heart, our words, and also the body. Then it is a complete obeisance. The offering of obeisance, according to the Nectar of Devotion, is, as stated by Srila Prabhupada, it is important as a discipline to get rid of the madness of material consciousness. Srila Prabhupada mentions that, just as we take therapy or treatment for various kinds of illnesses, and we take medicines, and we follow various do's and don'ts, and there is gradual recovery to normal health. So similarly, material consciousness is a diseased state of existence from a spiritual point of view. And therefore we take the course of treatment as is recommended by Guru Sadhu Shastra. And amongst the numerous rules and regulations given, the offering of obeisances is one of them. And by offering obeisances, then gradually the impurities in the heart are cleansed. In fact, it is one of the limbs of devotional service, of the 64 limbs of sadhana bhakti that have been enumerated by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And this is the 25th limb of the 64, and Rupa Goswami calls it Dandavan Natihi. So to offer obeisances by doing a Dandavat Pranam. And I'd like to read that little section of the Nectar of Devotion. It's one paragraph where Srila Prabhupada translates the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verse, and he adds a purport to that, a small purport. Quote, this is from the Nectar of Devotion. The chapter is titled Further Consideration of Devotional Principles, and the paragraph is titled Bowing Down in Honor of the Deity. Quote, in the Naradiya Purana, there is a statement about bowing down and offering respect to the deity. It is said there, a person who has performed a great ritualistic sacrifice and a person who has simply offered his respectful obeisances by bowing down before the Lord cannot be held as equals. Unquote. In this verse from the Narasimha Puran, the quote ends here and Prabhupada's purport starts. The person who has executed many great sacrifices will attain the result of his pious activities. But when such results are finished, he has to take birth again on the earthly planet. However, the person who has once offered respects, bowing down before the deity, will not come back to this world, because he will go directly to the abode of Krishna. So, there is a comparison being made between pious activities like offering so many of these yajñas and sacrifices on one hand and offering of respects here. The point being made here is that even offering obeisance, performing hundreds of such sacrifices are not equal to the offering of one obeisance. So in this act of, or in this analogy of comparison, actually you have a statement of contrast. In other words, what these verses indicate is that there is no comparison. There is no comparison to performing hundreds and hundreds of karmakandik sacrifices, sacrifices performed in the fruitive mentality on the material platform for elevation to heavenly planets and for other material gains. Such sacrifices in any number cannot compare to even one obeisance offered to Krishna. Because one obeisance, as Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, will take us towards the abode of the Supreme Lord. So what is the meaning of this? That you offer one obeisance and you go back to Godhead? Is that just such a casual thing, such an easy thing? There are many statements of this nature that are seen in the Vedic scriptures. For example, the pulling of the Rath of Lord Jagannath. We had the Rath Yatra festival celebrated a few days ago. For devotees, it was celebrated virtually mostly. In Jagannath Puri, it was done in a small scale. So there are scriptural verses that say that by pulling the chariot of Lord Jagannath, then one gets liberated and one goes back to Vaikuntha. Or by offering a lamp to the Lord in Kartik, one goes back to Vaikuntha, and so on. So a question may arise in the mind, just by performing this act one time, can one go back to Godhead? No, that is not the point. The point is that such an act has to be performed with one's full heart, with full devotion, number one. But even if it is casually performed, it will take us forward in the path of devotion. That will induce us to perform more such acts of obeisance or chanting the name of Krishna, of some service to Krishna in future. And when one continually performs these acts over a long period of time, then one accumulates the devotional sukriti or this devotional piety that is necessary to actually surrender to Krishna with complete understanding. Then one begins performing devotional service in full knowledge, in full understanding, with enthusiasm, according to the instructions of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So in such a situation then, one makes a rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness. And if one has followed the rules and regulations properly, then one can go back to Godhead at the end of this life, if Krishna's mercy is there upon one. So that is the indication. So a devotee who offers obeisances even once to Krishna has performed a greater service to himself and will achieve greater benefit than a person who performs a ritualistic act of performing many sacrifices for some fruitive material gain. Sometimes devotees become a little disheartened because they encounter some impediments in their Krishna consciousness and so on. So they say that, am I really going to be able to make it? Am I really making advancement in Krishna consciousness? And the answer is very positive, very hope-giving. And the answer is, and I usually I tell this to the devotees, that with every obeisance that you're offering to Krishna, you're making progress. With every name of Krishna that you're chanting, you're making progress. With every grain and morsel of Krishna prasadam that you are partaking, you are making progress. With every moment of darshan of the Lord's deity that you are doing, you are making progress. With every little act of service that you are doing, be it cleaning the temple floor or any other service like this that you are doing, you are moving ahead in Krishna consciousness. And since the devotees are doing this every single day, they are making progress, even though they may or may not realize it. So one should not become discouraged in the performance of Krishna consciousness when one does not experience the kind of advancement that one hopes for. One wants to become a pure devotee overnight or in a very short span of time, and when one still sees that it's not happening the way one would like to, there is a likelihood of getting discouraged. But this verse from the Naradiya Puran that is cited by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, should encourage us. The Nectar of Devotion also gives us numerous other instructions about offering obeisances. That obeisances has to be offered not just to Krishna, the deity of Krishna, but also to all those entities connected to Krishna, like the Vaishnavas and so on. That is important. And not just the spiritual master, even the devotees of the Lord. One should offer obeisances then to Tulasi, etc., as I have mentioned earlier. So, the offering of obeisances is a standard activity in devotional service, and one should not take it lightly. If one has some physical problem, one is not able to physically offer obeisances, one can at least fold one's hand, bow one's head down, and with one's heart, imagine that one is offering one's full obeisances with the body, and then speak words accordingly. So actually there is no impediment. One can offer obeisances, in any situation of life. And this prayerful mood is also synonymous with namaskar or pranam or obeisance. You know, in the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad speaks the famous verse, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atma Nivedanam, where he speaks about the Navavidha Bhakti, the ninefold process of devotional service, and one of them is Vandanam. Now generally we speak of Vandanam as offering prayers. And offering prayers is something that we say, let's say we sing the Tulasi prayers, or we sing the Gurvashtaka and so on in the morning. Yes, but Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as cited by Srila Prabhupada in the purport to that verse, 7.5.23.24, explains that Vandanam means not just offering of prayers, but also offering of obeisances. And later, at the end of that, of the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives his own purport based on the Shastras about what it means to, offer Vandanam. And I'll read here. I'll read the section of Vandanam from Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although prayers are a part of deity worship, they may be considered separately like other items such as hearing and chanting, and therefore separate statements are given herewith. The Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences, and one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities in various activities offers prayers to the Lord. In this way he becomes successful. In this connection, the following are some of the offenses to be avoided. And right after speaking about the offering of obeisances, Srila Prabhupada will speak now about the offenses involved in offering physical obeisances to the deity of the Lord, establishing here again that there is a very strong connection between the offering of obeisances and the offering of prayers, and that they are essentially the same thing. So let us see, what are the offenses in offering obeisances to the deity of the Lord? A. To offer obeisances on one hand. That is to lie down on the floor and just stretch one hand forward, and not and hold back the other hand. Don't hold back anything. Put both your hands forward. Just offering obeisances with one hand looks too much like a Hitler-esque, a Hail Hitler kind of thing. That was just in lighter vein anyway. Second one, to offer obeisances with one's body covered with some kind of a cloth or something. C. To show one's back to the deity. D. To offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. And E. To offer obeisances very near the deity. So meaning that pujaris who are on the altar should not offer obeisances to the deity when they are in the garbha griha or in the altar area of the Lord. They should just fold their hands. They should not physically offer obeisances. And one should not offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. That is, the deity's left side. But we should offer obeisances keeping the deity on our left side. So this question also arises that we offer obeisances to the deities in the temple, keeping the deities on the left. Why is that so? I remember when I was a new devotee, the first time I came to the temple, in Juhu Temple, in about, I think it was 84, 85, and I offered my obeisance. I saw the devotees offering obeisances, and then I said I should also do that. And I offered it in the wrong direction, with my right side to the deity. And there was some devotee sitting there chanting japa, and he kindly came up and told me, no, this is the wrong way to offer obeisances. You have to offer obeisances with the deities on your left. And I never forgot that from that day. So why so? Because, you see, the offering of obeisances, keeping the worshipable entity on the right, is for demigods. When you offer obeisances to Krishna, you should offer obeisances with Krishna on the left. When you offer to the demigods should be on your right. When you offer obeisances to the spiritual master, according to one of the verses, then you should offer perpendicularly, that means straight forward. However, It has become the practice within ISKCON to, when you go in front of the deity of Prabhupada, also usually people offer keeping Prabhupada's deity on the left. But strictly speaking, it should be offered perpendicularly. But sometimes we don't do that because Prabhupada's deity faces the deities of Radha and Krishna or whichever other deities are there. So if we offer obeisances to Prabhupada like that, our feet may be towards the deities. So in any case, that's not the most important point. But at least for the deities, one should be clear that one offers with obeisances on the keeping the deities on the left side, not on the right side. So this, of course, is a big topic. I think we've done quite a bit. there were so many other things to say. There are so many wonderful prayers, but it is a long topic. Suffice it to conclude at this point and say that indeed offering obeisances is very important for us. It should be feelingly done. It should be done in a spirit of humility. It should be done not as a gymnastic exercise to display one's physical fitness, like doing some push-ups or something. It is done in a mood of humility, in a mood of surrender, in a mood of devotion. You know, it is done in a prayerful mood. There are many more things to say about offering obeisances, but I think I will stop here for now. I think I've crossed the time limit. It's quite late. So if there are any questions, so Divinam Prabhu, do we wait for some questions?
Yes, Maharaj. Maharaj, I know it's already a little late, but if you allow, there are already a few devotees raised their hands.
Yes.
Okay. So the first question is from Shamila Gopika Mataji. So Mataji, you can go ahead.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for the wonderful session, spiritual session, great message. Actually, I have a question that I generally thought that for Mataji's, it's not applicable to the Dandaya pranams. So we do the
Panchanga pranams
of the body. Yeah. So, but when we communicate to the devotees, like we say, like when we offer obeisances directly, so we say, like, please accept my Dandaya pranams. So whether that is proper to say from Mataji's side, or we have to say anything else, like just the respect to the
patient. No, there's no problem in saying it. There's no problem in saying it at all. Although generally, as you have said, ladies do not offer the full pranam, the Dandavat Ashtanga pranam generally. If somebody insists on offering it, it's one thing, but it's not a kind of the norm. You know, so that is how it is. But to say it verbally and you're offering obeisances, then there's no objection for that. Okay, any other questions?
Okay, so Kirti Sundari Mataji wants to ask. Go ahead, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to you, Maharaj. Thank you. Thank you so much for such a nectarian class, and thank you for covering such an important topic. I really wish that Divinam Prabhu can schedule you again so that you can continue this topic in another class. Prabhu Maharaj, I just have one question. Like you told about paying obeisances. So how we should go with the, you know, like how Raghunath Das Goswami, when he used to pay obeisances, he used to count. So how about the Sankhya? You know, should we take into consideration that since it's one of the limb of devotional service, so should we have this also that, okay, this much counts, I'm going to pay to the deities, you know, count matters or not?
It depends. In sadhana bhakti, there is the conception of counting. And there is a feeling that I must do this at least so many times. So one should do it with this kind of a mood. The mood is very important. You know, if one does it that, I have taken a vow to offer 100 obeisances to the deities every day, or 1,000 obeisances, or something like that, and then it just makes us feel proud that, you know, we are so humble that I'm offering 1,000 obeisances every day. So that kind of a mood is not appropriate. But if somebody has a resolve, maybe not a vow even, but even some kind of a sankalpa or a resolve that I want to offer, let's say, 50 obeisances every day to the deities, fine, that's all right, that's perfectly fine. But it need not be something that is broadcast to others. It's not something that we can say, well, I've done my 50 obeisances, 100 obeisances for today. That would go against the principle of humility. So there's no harm in counting, but if you want to do it as a discipline, as some kind of a resolve, it's okay. But keep the proper mood in mind. Yes, the thank you for reminding us about the obeisances offered by Raghunath Das Goswami at Sitran Vrindavan. I did not have time to discuss all these things. But yes, it's a very, very wonderful thing. Our six Goswamis have shown the way to all of us, how humble they were, how devoted they were, and how austere they were, that they offered so many obeisances to the deities as well as to the devotees.
Thank you so much.
Okay, any other question?
So yes, Maharaj, there are a couple more hands up. Next question is from Ritik Kumar Prabhu. So Prabhu, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavatanam. So my question is obeisance affect our sanskara?
Yes, definitely. Every obeisance that you offer will create a certain impression on your chitta, on your consciousness. And that will create very positive devotional samskaras, impressions on the mind. So no obeisance goes in vain.
Okay. So, Maharaj, maybe a couple more. Next is from Rajesh Prabhu. Go ahead, Rajesh Prabhu.
Thank you for the wonderful time. Prabhuji, in the temple, there is a time when we have to enter temple of number of acts, when we go to the temple for seva. So that time, there is a time, every time we have to involve, like something very important. But in that situation, again we have to do a dandavat to the Prabhupada thereafter to the giving. Then confusion is always what.
So your question is that when one repeatedly enters the temple and leaves for some service, then should one offer obeisances each time one leaves or enters? Strictly speaking, yes. And there is a sequence also for that. I'll come to the other part when if it's too frequent, but strictly speaking, if, let's say, you're not coming in too frequently, then you should offer obeisances first to Prabhupada, then to the deities. And when you leave, you should offer to the deities and then to Prabhupada before leaving. Okay? So that is the sequence in which you would offer obeisances when coming in and when going out. You would reverse the sequence on the way out. Now, if you're coming in just on a few occasions or one occasion, then we should do this when we enter and also when we leave. Now, if you're coming in more frequently, then even if you can't offer the full Ashtanga Pranam, at least the Panchanga Pranam can be offered. And if you're coming in some emergency and you're running or so, you know, something, then at least in your mind do that. Offer obeisances and just do it. But generally this would be the pattern. Okay, any other question?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. My question was, like, we are considering whether the Diti of the Lord is on the left or right, but in our houses, like, if we go for a pranam and if we place the Diti's on the left and then we face the south, so is that a problem or is it okay?
No, you're bringing in two different ways. One is left and right and the other is south and north. They're don't mix up these two.
Okay.
What Prabhupada is saying in the purport here is that one should not offer obeisances on the left of the deity. Whichever is the left side of the deity, you should not go to the left side there and offer deities. One should come in the front of the deity and then offer obeisances in the proper way. That is the point.
Okay, so it is okay if we follow that as a guideline to, like, offering obeisances at home also?
Yes, I mean, offering obeisances in the front is always the guideline. But okay. One has to come in the front of the deity and offer obeisances.
Okay, seeing the time, we'll just take one last question as we have many more hands, but just to respect everyone's time, Maharaj's time. So, last question is from Aditya Narayan Prabhu. Go ahead, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for such a wonderful class and very practical. Maharaj, my question was, when you were talking of Brahma and when he offers prayers in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you mentioned that the mood that Brahma had, and you mentioned those 4 points that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said as very, very practical. But coming back to Brahma, you said like his mood was with awe and also with love and also fear, right? So there's multiple emotions in that offering of these senses. So Maharaj, my question is, like, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's like filled with so many different prayers, and sometimes we have demigods offering obeisances with more the mood of like expecting protection from the Lord, or you know, we have different moods. So my question is, while we are reading Bhagavatam, should we actually consider these moods and be selective on which prayers that we should consider to offer to Krishna? Or could we, since it's Srimad Bhagavatam, we can offer any of those prayers? Does that question make sense?
It's a good question. You're right. Obeisances can be offered for different reasons, in different moods, and in different circumstances, for different purposes. Sometimes obeisances may be offered just to express one's surrender. Sometimes obeisances may be offered to beg something from the Lord, like protection. Sometimes one may offer obeisances because one is needy for something in an extreme situation. One may offer obeisances out of appreciation of the glories of the Lord. One may offer obeisances out of a feeling of gratitude for the Lord. One may offer obeisances to seek forgiveness for a mistake that has been made. So in this way, one could offer obeisances for various reasons with various moods. So when one studies, these different prayers in the Srimad Bhagavatam and elsewhere too, it would be good for us to also identify the mood in which that prayer is being spoken. And then identify with that mood and understand it and relish it in that way. And these different prayers in which the obeisances are offered will exhibit these various moods. So certainly we can try to relish those different moods. Because it is Bhagavatam, it is perfect. And we can try to study all these prayers and understand the mood and the mood in which the obeisances are being offered. And sometimes an obeisance may be offered for multiple purposes, many in one. One obeisance may be for a multiplicity of reasons. Sometimes it may be a plea, a request to the Lord. You know, please don't leave, please don't go away, stay back, stay here in Hastinapur, don't go. As Kunti Maharani is praying. So these could be the different moods in which the obeisances are offered, and we can recognize them, appreciate them. Okay? Okay.
So, with that, we would like to pay our obeisances to Maharaj with a plea that Maharaj, please come back to the devotees of Richmond and different yatras here in America. We miss your association here. Hopefully, you know, when all the things settle down, you can come back to US. Maharaj, you travel a lot in UK and Europe and Australia, but not much in US, so we request you to please come to give your association to devotees of US also.
Thank you very much to Divyanam Prabhu for inviting me and allowing me to serve all of you. And I do hope that all of you continue on with full enthusiasm in your Krishna consciousness. Okay, there's one question from the Facebook, so I'll just take that one question. Yes.
Maharaj, sometimes we are wearing shoes and suddenly some exalted Vaishnava come in front of you. Can we do obeisances with shoes on?
Okay, the question on the Facebook is that, let's say we are wearing shoes and at that time we see some exalted Vaishnava coming in front of us, then can we offer obeisances with our shoes on? Well, it's not a very difficult task to remove your shoes. Just slip them off quickly and offer obeisances. Ideally, it is not proper to offer obeisances with the shoes on. So just slip them off and offer obeisances and then wear the shoes again. That's the ideal thing. But if you're just walking by and there's something and you know you're not in a position to do that, you're on the street and you pass by some temple at a distance, and you see the chakra on the top, even then, if possible, one should take off one's shoes, stand bare feet on the road, and then at least fold one's hand and offer obeisance to that chakra. You know, the namaskar one can do. Only in very exceptional circumstances, where you're not in a position to remove your shoes or something, and it's in that case, okay, better to offer obeisances with shoes on than to not offer obeisances. But preferably, you should see that you can remove your shoes. Okay. So, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.